Welcome to the Julia and Gino podcast, where business meets family. We explore what the entrepreneurial life looks like from a family perspective. We are your hosts, Julia and Gino Barbaro. Hey everyone, Julia Barbaro here, host of the Julia and Gino podcast. I'm here with the co-founder of Jake and Gino, my husband and co-host, Gino Barbaro.
Hey, Julia.
Yes.
How you doing?
I'm great. Excited for today's podcast.
Well, today we're welcome back Dr. Jennifer Thomas. She's a clinical psychologist, consultant, TEDx speaker, and co-author of the Five Apology Languages. Dr. Jen helps others break through barriers, build respect, and grow their businesses by apologizing the smart way, trading in tired excuses for honesty, trust, and joy. And there's a reason why we brought her on the first time is because we're slow learners. Mm-hmm. And number two, this is such an important topic for the family life, as well as for corporate life. It's just for every aspect of your life. And I think the book is amazing, this book. We're going to go through the book and all. So I just want to welcome Dr. Jennifer to the show. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thanks. I'm excited to talk with you all again.
Yeah, I'm excited for this one. It's funny because I personally like to read books and listen to podcasts based on family life. This one, it's funny because I've read a lot of your other book and a lot of Dr. Gary Chapman's books, and they're really relatable to me as a mother, as a wife. But this one in particular was nice. I'm glad that you wrote something separate for the workforce because it's really needed. This is, I was reading through this and I was like, oh, thank you. So thank you for writing it.
Well, you're welcome. We know at work, people try to get along, but it's inevitable if you live and breathe that even if you don't intend to, you're going to sometimes step on people's toes and then things go downhill from there. So we're just trying to help groups to keep things running on track so they can be productive and satisfied.
In the book, you say that on average, one day per month is spent on conflict. If everyone takes a note of that, what is the lost productivity, the lost energy that you have at work? Give us some of the common causes of conflict.
Well, one of the big ones is that we have these different personalities and we carry our junk from our childhoods right into our work situation. And it's funny, if you look at the conflicts at work, do they sometimes remind you of what you had maybe when you were growing up? We can get right back into those sibling dynamics and don't tell me what to do. And the boss didn't tell me to do that. Why are you trying to boss me? You're not the boss. And then other personality things. Some of us have more pride than others. We come in with different amounts of character strengths and character flaws. And then we all get in there and we're trying to work under stress, sometimes very high stress. And as you know, that can make things go south really quickly. While we could get along at a company picnic or a baseball game, when the rubber hits the road and we need to be meeting some deadlines, that's when people get really shaken up and you'll see some of those underlying personality traits coming out where someone who's on the directive or controlling side is going to be incredibly bossy and controlling. And then people are going to push back against that and say, look, who put you in charge? And just let me do my work here. We're all trying to get to the same place. And so the passion that my co-authors, Gary Chapman and Paul White and I have is to help teams be able to get back to work and set aside the conflicts they're having. So we have some tools for conflict resolution and really for preventing conflicts in the first place.
You said a lot there. First thing I think everyone should understand is to be successful and to be happy in life, you need to be responsible. So don't always blame other people for conflicts because you have a lot of junk yourself. So being responsible, being conscious, and not always blaming others because you're part of the solution. My dad always used to tell me it takes two to tango. You can tango by yourself, but it's not a lot of fun and you don't really get anywhere. But when you're in the office place, your boss may be a jerk, but some of that also has to lie upon you. And being responsible will allow you to get really look at those conflicts and look at them in a different light. First, how do you avoid conflict? Let's go by before trying to solve it. Mm-hmm. What are good ways to avoid conflict?
Right. So one of the key things is to agree on your expectations. Talking with your team about what needs to happen, who's going to do it, when they're going to do it by, because if you say you're going to do it, you might mean by the end of next week, and I might mean by the end of today. So a lot of conflict creeps in when we don't specify what is your time frame. And then another step to take is to talk about what might pop up and get in the way of you doing what you said you were going to do, and how can we head off potential problems? Because one of the most important pieces of trust is knowing that you're going to do what you say you're going to do. Like today, you all said you're going to interview me. Mm-hmm. And when I logged in, there you all were, which is great that you said, I'll be there. And we need the same thing from our coworkers. If they say they're going to have a deliverable, we don't want them to come the day before and say, you know, this job's too big, or I need help from someone else. They need to have figured that out on the front end. And when they do that and they produce like they say they're going to, then our trust can grow.
I got my wife here. I got to tell you, I think she read the book like 3 times because she must be having something going on. She's got like 17 pages of notes in front of her. So she's going to read some complicated.
Well, that's why
I. Are you trying to say sorry to me in a way or something?
No, this book is so much information. It's an easy read. I just want to put it out there, which is really helpful. It's not so thick. It's a good sized book. There's so much information. And I recommend all our readers get the book. And if you're, you know, if you're just starting out a company or you're in a work, you're working with other people, it's really helpful to have this. Maybe even write a little plan associated with this book because there's so many little, thank you, Jen. There's so many excellent points in there. And you had mentioned trust. Now, you also mentioned earlier that here we are all coming from different homes, different lives, different backgrounds into a workforce working together. And a lot of people are sensitive about how you talk, what you, you know, everyone has a different love language, of course, but at the same time, we're trying to figure all this out at the same time. And you mentioned trust, and I want to talk a little bit more about trust and maybe even how to rebuild trust. Because a lot of times when you're working with other people, you're trying to figure them out. You can't just sit and have, you know, have a DISC assessment with each, you know what I mean? Personally with everybody, but there is, trust is so important. But to try to figure it out with each person, you know, it's easier with your children because you know them so well, or with your husband because you know them so well. But when you're working with coworkers, how do you either truly build the trust or rebuild it if it's broken?
Right. Well, we talk about the 3 C's of trust, which I also found John Maxwell talks about that. And we included it in our book because we think these 3 are really key. The 3 C's of trust are competence, consistency, and character. Mm-hmm. So this is the same way you build trust is the same way that you prevent a loss of trust. And that is, I need to come with my A game. I need to show the competence that I have. And when I'm doing my work, whatever it is, I need to do it well and show that your trust is well placed in me. Then I need to not just do it well today, I need to do it well as often as I can. And that is the consistency that we're talking about. I don't want you to produce well just 1 time out of 5. If you're producing well every time, then that's when people are going to see the raises and the job security that they want. Mm-hmm. And then the 3rd quality in trust is character. And this is the one that really starts in our childhoods, where you learn, as you mentioned earlier, we need to accept responsibility. That's part of character. We need to do what we say we're going to do. And we need to do the right thing, even when we think maybe no one's looking. Because when you see people demonstrating good character and being ethical, then that's when you say, you know what, I trust them. Like, even if I'm not here, I don't think they're going to talk smack about me behind my back, you know? So be the coworker who says, hey, let's not talk about her. She's not here, you know, or let's give her a break. She's had a hard month and maybe she's not feeling well. Mm-hmm. Because when you cover someone's back like that, then you're putting them on notice. Look, I don't want to hear that. I don't want gossip about that person or about me. And I think that it raises the level of health or wellness within the whole organization. Then if you flip that around, we talk in Making Things Right at Work about toxic workplaces. And that's where there's a lot of gossip and infighting and unhealthy competition. Now, sometimes competition is good. It's good to have measurable goals that you're working towards. But we find a lot of conflict creeps up when people are fighting for maybe the approval of the manager, and they might say to each other, well, you're just trying to get on their good side, or you're trying to make me look bad. That is the kind of competition that is toxic and that really does erode trust.
So my wife is really good with this, because as far as those 3 C's, I look at myself in the 3 C's. I am a very competent person. Consistency, I consistently make it happen. And character, I mean, come on, I am awesome.
You're amazing.
So as far as trust goes, you can trust me, baby, right?
That's why I'm here with you.
And what I like to say about the 3 C's is another 3 C's that Steve Robinson talks about with Chick-fil-A, which I think is very similar. When they're hiring people, the 3 C's from Chick-fil-A are character, competency, and chemistry. So that's what they're looking for in a workforce. So if you're looking to hire people, look for those three C's so you don't have to worry so much about your three C's. You're trying to get the right people in the right ships. Right. Obviously, conflicts come about, but if there's chemistry within your hiring, if you have the core values, if you have the culture, if myself as the leader, as the entrepreneur is providing that vision and the tools for those people to be able to execute that, I think with communication along with that, I don't think you lose the trust. And I think you can continue that trust. So I don't know if you want to add to that, because I thought when Steve Robinson said that on our podcast about a year ago, I was like, well, I like that. You want people to have character and the chemistry, the competency, they can learn the job. If they're competent, you can train almost anybody to do the job. But I think those two are really important.
Yeah, I haven't heard that before about the chemistry piece, but I do like that. And I also like for part of the chemistry to involve different perspectives. You know, we don't want to be too homogenous. Sometimes the chemistry, you know, it might naturally feel better if you're just like me, but that's not always good because then you're just like my brother who drove me crazy and who I'm going to argue with. But I love it when a company, and I think this is true of Chick-fil-A, that they bring in some diversity. They get opinions from people who didn't all grow up with the same background. And then you have people who can say, you know what, I think that's tone deaf. I don't think that's going to play right. And we're going to end up having to make a public apology or something. And then that's where they call me in to help. Hey, can you look over this apology and help make sure we're not making the common mistakes? So all of those together work to bring down the level of toxicity in the workplace and to help us be able to drive towards those company goals.
I love that. And it's what Dr. Jen is talking about is we don't want groupthink. We don't want people just agreeing with each other. Like we see in the media, in the East and West Coast, they all agree with each other. They have no idea what's going on in the middle of the part of the country. And they're missing a big opportunity to speak to those people. I think it plays to what the vision is here at Jake and Gino. We're trying to become the white glove service of multifamily. We all have that vision. That's what our vision is here. And some of us are looking to do it one way and some of us are looking to do it the other way. But our chemistry is such that our main goal is to really provide that value to the students. Now, how do we do that? We may differ on that, but the chemistry is there that we're all, that's the focus. And one of the core values that we lean upon is people first. So our people first is that is part of that chemistry. We may disagree on how to do that. That's a great way to discuss things. But I think if you have the chemistry amongst the team, they're all aligned to what we're trying to do. And we're trying to make work towards those core values. I think that's really important. You know, what are your thoughts
on
that?
I agree. And another thing that can get in the way of working successfully as a team that we talk about in our book is misattribution of motives. And not a lot of people are familiar with this, but it's a huge dynamic that I see as I work with companies. People will say things like, you're just trying to, and then fill in the blank. It's usually something negative. Like, you're just trying to get your name at the top of this project. You're just trying to make yourself look good, when that may not be correct at all. It may be that they are thinking, well, we've got this deadline. We need to dig in and get it done. So I'm trying to do this for all of us. And a problem with misattribution of motives is that we really usually don't realize when we're doing it. And so the first step is to say to yourself, or if you hear a coworker making a negative attribution, to say, wait a minute, what's going on? It sounds like you're really taking a dim view of them and of their motives. Can we play that back, rewind it, and take a look at what good motives they might actually have? Now, popular TEDx speaker and researcher Brené Brown has talked about this theory, and I'm glad that she's bringing it to the surface more. She calls the attribution thing the stories we tell ourselves in our heads. And I really like that, because we do tell ourselves stories, right? We'll say, you know, you're trying to do whatever that is going to make me not look good, or you're trying to be condescending to me, when they don't intend that at all. And so I just always am working with people to be aware of their motives and to be open to hearing from someone else. If they say, wait a minute, I think you're misjudging them. Be willing to make the most positive judgments about others, to be charitable and to be empathetic.
I love that. It's showing your character at that point, right? And it's showing your the moment where you're responsible and for your awareness and what you do say to somebody else, because a lot of us get caught up in that, you know, workplace gossip or workplace trying to bring the other people down so you get ahead. And so sometimes we don't mean to, but it's right in our face and we get caught up in it. And so that awareness, that moment of getting in your head and saying, hold on a second, is this what I'm thinking too? Or am I just going along with it because everybody else is? And it takes courage if you're the one person in the company maybe that doesn't want to belong. Talk a little bit about the assumptions. I have that written down. To me, that's such a big deal. When I started life coaching with my husband, the assumptions were so incredible. And sometimes you're assuming what the other person is thinking and you actually make decisions based off of that. And so in the workplace, how do you talk a bit about it in the book. Let's talk about assumptions a little bit.
Yeah. So assumptions really grow out of that topic of what are your motivations? So I'm assuming either the best or the worst in you. It's kind of like if you have these glasses and if you're assuming the worst about someone, it's like you put on dark glasses. Mm. So you literally take a dim view of them and what they're trying to do. Whereas if you're making positive assumptions, it's more like putting on rose-colored glasses. And now when I look at the same actions you're taking, I might say, oh, well, you're just really trying to help us get ahead. It's not that you're trying to take this away from all of us. So looking at what am I assuming about you and your motives? And then more broadly with assumptions, we need to communicate directly about things. Sometimes people say, oh, well, I didn't know you were trying to do that or that was your intention. I just assumed fill in the blank. And that's where things go off track. We need to actually ask clarifying questions. Mm-hmm. And then another key skill that we can develop to help keep things going well at work is to look at the gap we have between our empathy for ourselves and our empathy or patience with others. And that gap can actually be decreased if we practice putting ourselves in the other person's shoes and saying, look, I don't know what all they have going on both at work and at home, but I imagine it's a lot. And so let me see, instead of criticizing them directly or to other people, let me ask them, what can I do to help you? Mm-hmm. And going around and really showing that you're a team player.
That is a really difficult one. Chick-fil-A has a video on how when they onboard their employees, it's an empathy video where they have clients coming in and they'll have like a little bubble above this client's head. And they'll say something like, oh, this person is cancer-free. Or this person lost their job, or you know, this person lost their mom. So the employee doesn't see a person that's just ordering a chicken sandwich. They see another person on the other side. And once you see that empathy, you start serving others at a different level. And it's sort of the same thing with us in the property management space. Our maintenance techs get a call. They've got to go fix a hot water heater. Oh, I got to go fix a hot water heater. But if you can relay to them, that may be a single mom who needs to have hot water to take a shower to go to a job interview. And if they don't get that job interview and they don't able to take that shower, they won't get that job to be able to pay next month's rent. Now the maintenance tech, like, I have responsibility to do duty to get there, get it done quickly. It just sort of looks a little differently. And that empathy is powerful if you can portray that. And we're trying to do the same thing with when we onboard students in the Jake and Gino community. They're not just a number. They're not just an enrollee. They all have a special message of why they want to become financially free or what's driving them to get out of the current situation they have now. And if you can become empathetic, you can serve them at such a higher level. I don't know if you want to add anything to that.
Yeah. Well, your point is really well taken. You know, it's so important to think about what's the purpose of our work? What is our mission statement? And how can I live it out? I love the example of going over to make the repair so they can get to the interview. We don't often think about that. We may just, our work can feel like drudgery sometimes, but it really flips the script when you say, you actually get to go and help someone. You get to go and rescue someone who is stuck. And that makes people stand up a little taller and get excited about what they're doing.
Yeah. And it's important to know that, you know, in any part of your life, we have two children's books that I love because there's a character in there, Pity Party Pig, who is just, he sweeps floors and that's what his position is. And he, you know, at the end of the book, he really takes his job seriously because we need those people in the world. And I think that's important, is that we're showing every employee that we have or that we work with, or even on the other side, if they're taking our order, is they're needed in the world and they have value and purpose. In the book, there's a whole area that I love. And this is a hard one because I feel like, and I could be wrong, maybe I'm just older and more aware, but I feel like the culture has been very offended and anything we say, how we say it is wrong. And, you know, they take offense. You're trying to do the right thing. You're trying to figure out people's appreciation language. Maybe you're saying something nice or you get a little gift or here and there, but it's always wrong. And it just, does that seem, is it me getting older and realizing more, or are people getting offended more?
Well, there definitely is a huge political divide in our country, which we'd like to see that decreasing. Mm-hmm. And you're right, Julia, people will misunderstand your motives sometimes when you're trying to do a helpful or a caring thing. And the problem is if that is refused, then you're offended. And so now we've got conflict to deal with. Mm-hmm. And I do want to say as a side point, not all conflict is bad. Mm-hmm. So sometimes we need to have a tough conversation. And that's the path through a crisis to make things much better. Erickson was a psychologist a long time ago who said a crisis is basically like moving you from the level you're on to go up a step to the next level. And so he said, you know, crises are good. They actually move us along. Mm-hmm. But what we're trying to do in this book is to help people get the progress and the growth to the next step without taking too high of a toll on those personal relationships. Because ultimately, we want people to not have barriers between them, not have the barriers within the team that come from unresolved conflict. But if you find that you've been offensive to someone, if you can do some simple things like don't pass the blame, don't try to excuse yourself, accept responsibility, and then apologize in their apology language, then chances are that you're going to be able to move those barriers out of the way and get back to work.
Dr. Jen, do you have any thoughts on, I don't know if you can answer the question, but we had talked about a person who creates a narrative in their mind. They have this story mm-hmm. that maybe when you hear it out, you know, it's the most far-fetched thing you've ever heard of, but that's what they're really thinking. People see the world as they are, not as it is, unfortunately. That's just the reality. How do you, right. you know, talk to the listener who's listening to this and going, I'm going through this right now. I don't know if what I'm saying to myself is makes sense or doesn't make sense. How do I work through that? And not create a conflict where there may not be a conflict.
Yeah, this is a tough one. It comes back to the character and personality. And unfortunately, if you're the kind of person who puts on those negative glasses and takes a dim view of what others are doing, your reflex is to think that the other person is not being cooperative with you. I see it a lot when I work with partnerships. So especially 50-50 partnerships in business, these people are like cats and dogs because they don't have a boss. They're just in it together. And I've seen them say things like, my partner is trying to drive me crazy. And it can get all the way down like to housekeeping things. Like, you know, she'll put the trash can by the door, but she won't take it all the way out to the bin. She's just trying to make me do it. When, you know, the truth could be something completely different. It could be that she had her hands full. She put it by the door to remember it, and then she couldn't get it. And she said, I'll get it first thing in the morning. But the partner has this toxic interpretation, which we talk as the negative assumption, that has made her blood boil all evening until they get to work the next day. And then the next problem is if you explode on your partner and you say, you know, usually if we're exploding on someone, there are some fouls that we will use, a sign that you're not in a good space to talk and you probably shouldn't have the conversation would be if you're raising your voice, if you're pointing your finger, and if you're using extreme words like all, none, every, and all. For example, you make me do everything around here. You don't do anything. You are gone every day when I'm still here working.
That's the conversation that I have with my wife. She says that to me all the time. I do everything around.
I stopped. Just to put him out there.
Yeah. We see it a lot in my house. I've got 3 kids, nearly grown. But, you know, I'll just say that's not good communication. Mm-hmm. The problem is there's got to be at least one exception to that. And the person, you're trying to make your point, and they're thinking of the exception. Like, well, yeah, you work later 4 days out of 5, but that one time I stayed later, you're not giving me credit for that. Right. So the whole argument gets missed. Far better to say, I'm unhappy with the number of hours that I'm working compared to how many hours you're working. I'd like for us to talk about if you can step it up. I know you've had some stress going on, but I don't feel like it's equitable. Where are we going to go from here? That's and the other person may say, I see it completely differently. And then what you need to do is go to counseling as a work couple. Go ahead.
No, that's it's. I think the biggest takeaway when I was doing, like I said, life coaching, actually, there's many takeaways, but one of the bigger ones was that awareness of before you say you always do that, because a lot of us tend to use that phrase, you're always doing that. Stop before you say it. And this can be any of the terms that you just said. And say, okay, does he always do that? No, sometimes, yeah. Once in a while, that's pretty right. So it's you once in a while you do this, it's very different than you always. And I think that, I'm trying to teach my children that too, because so they're aware that that person doesn't bother them all the time. It's just really once in a while. And it's not most of the day. It's just like, you know, 2 minutes out of the whole entire day, which is very different. And I think that is something that we could relate to in the workforce too, is because people get on our nerves and then all of a sudden they're always doing it. Meanwhile, you know, maybe once a week they do it. So I think that's a good awareness, right?
Yeah, the workplace is really a grown-up version of our childhood home.
Right.
And often it's like all the siblings are there and there are no parents. And when I was growing up, that's when fights would break out. Like I remember one time I was sick and I wanted to run because the ice cream truck was going around the neighborhood. So I went and grabbed my money and my older sister said, no, you can't go. You're sick. You need to stay in the house. And we literally had a wrestling match at the door because nothing was going to get between me and that ice cream truck. But, you know, we worked it through. At the time, I screamed some things at her, like, you're not the boss of me. And now, you know, you grow up and, you know, if I have someone at work telling me, you can't do that, there's no way, forget about it. What am I? I'm ready to wrestle him to the ground like I did my sister. And that's not going to go well. You know, right. I know physically we're not as apt to have those conflicts at work. We've got more self-control, but still emotionally, we can fight with our words just the same as we used to fight with our brothers and sisters if we had them. And then there are the ones who didn't. What about the only children? What are they like in the workplace?
They're worse. Well, oh my God, they're entitled. They're all by themselves. They're like, it's just true, me. Right? I'm making a generalization, but I can see that being a nightmare. By, well, the boss didn't pay attention to me, or why did I get this seat?
That's not true.
Oh,
Dr. Exactly. Jen? They didn't have to share in the same way.
I didn't have to share. Yeah, I'm the youngest. It depends on the age order, right?
A break in the age order. You didn't have to share as much. My undergraduate thesis at UVA was actually on something called non-shared environment, which is how the family is different for each child, even though you think same parents, same environment. Mm-hmm. It's not. And here's a simple example of it. My third child's first sentence was, my basketball. And he turned away with the basketball to protect it. Mm-hmm. And I thought, you never hear that in a first child because that their parents were not the ones taking their basketball, yes. Right? It's right. The siblings.
Yes.
So what does that mean for the workplace? Basically, get to know your coworkers. Mm-hmm. Ask them about their families and their siblings and how did you all get along? And then watch with maybe a sense of humor as some of that gets lived back out. Do they play the role of the youngest child, like you're saying? Do they, when they get defensive, what do they accuse people of if they do? And chances are that it's some old repeated message that if they'll bring in a consultant to help everybody be able to get off one-on-one and get the support and validation they need, then the conflict can be resolved and the team can get back to work more productively than ever.
Wow. What you got?
That's
next?
A lot.
What's your next question?
That's a lot. I just think it's interesting because even, you know, we have six children and there's a big space. And so it's for the younger, you know, she's seven and it's not fair that the older one gets to go out for coffee by herself. Like she can drive to get coffee. The third one, actually.
You're 7 years old.
And so it's interesting how the ages go down, down, down. You know, who can stay up later goes down, 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 because it's not fair that the older one is. And, you know, it's in their little head, they don't understand that in 3 years, they'll be that age and they'll be older. So that's a hard one, but it does go in. It's interesting how our childhood goes into our adulthood and then into the workforce, more so than sometimes as the family. You know, like my husband and I got together, we get married, we come from different backgrounds. It's a challenge having children is a challenge because then you're bringing your backgrounds into that. But now you're going right. off into work. And so now you're dealing with people that you have no idea what their background. And a lot of times you'll never know. You know, you can ask them all you want, but you still won't get the gist of it. You won't really understand it fully. And that's a challenge. Have you experienced just by working with other companies and partnerships that they actually have to dissolve, that they actually have to separate, where it just, there's not hope, but you know, it's not worth it.
Yes, I absolutely have. I've seen them have to buy each other out. Mm-hmm. And it's hard because then you're getting into business valuation and it's not really worth all that. Yes, it is. You know, it's really hard to agree on a price. I've found less conflict if partnerships are even 1% off, like a 51-49 ownership, less conflict than the 50-50. So I do recommend that. I also advise people to be cautious about working full-time with their spouse. Mm-hmm. I know some people do it, they make it work, but ultimately it can put a strain on the marriage, and you just have to decide if the benefits outweigh those risks.
Listen, it could be awesome. The only thing
part-time.
Well, we have to really be in our own lanes because sometimes she's giving me advice. I'm like, you don't know what you're talking about because you're not there.
Right.
You aren't seeing. And at the same time, when I say something at home, but why the kids are acting like, she can come back and say to me, well, you're not here every day homeschooling them. They're not yelling at you. So, I mean, we have to look through that lens. I love working with her personally because I feel comfortable. I trust her.
Trust is huge.
Yeah. I've had a whole family business. I know if I say something to her, she will absolutely do it. She's got my back. So for us, I think when you're looking at a partnership with your spouse, should think that everybody, if you're married, you should be able to work with your spouse. I mean, if you're trying to accomplish it, there shouldn't be. Now, full-time, I don't know because we don't really do it full-time. I could see her driving me a little crazy.
Full-time would be a challenge for sure. And I, you know, so all those out there working full-time, like Dr. Jen said, maybe 51-49 might be a better idea because, you know what I mean? Because I know
in
the end,
baby.
Jake and Gino is Gino. You're
51.
I'm the 51.
But I'm the 51 at home.
You can have it. Yeah, well, I'm the generator.
I'll take it. I'm going to take it.
So this question is, in the book, you have 79% of people leave work from lack of appreciation. That's really important. Now, baby, I appreciate you. I tell you how awesome you are every day. So you will stay with me forever and ever. But talk about that. I mean, we don't show enough appreciation. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, my partner, myself, we lack that awareness sometimes to be able to tell our team, you've done a good job. We have weekly huddles. We have daily huddles. We talk about wins and all. But like Julia said, sometimes I think this generation really, I mean, they need, because they're working for something. They're not like the baby boomers who went to work, were loyal, they're a part of the company. This younger generation wants to go to work and wants to really create impact and do something and work towards something. So can you speak about how we can show more appreciation, or at least have an awareness or appreciation for employees?
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up because companies these days are having trouble getting employees. Mm-hmm. And so we don't want to be losing the ones that you've already hired and trained. They're invaluable. Mm-hmm. So we want to have them feel appreciated and valued. And we can do that by using the 5 love languages. And Paul White and Carrie Chapman wrote the book on appreciation at work. You need to be able to match up how you're trying to show appreciation to them with what they're waiting for. So that ties in with, you know, you don't always want to give a gift card because especially if it's given to everyone, it feels too generic. You want to figure out, well, what is your hobby? And then maybe give a gift card or a magazine subscription that ties in with that hobby. So more personalization and being specific is helpful. And then especially when you're talking about giving affirmation to people, it often comes back to words of affirmation. Am I giving you the praise that you need? And I do think when the stress gets high and when we're busy, that can easily suffer. And so, you know, a manager may feel like, well, we just got to get this done. But if they'll take the time to express gratitude, say thank you for what people are doing or at least trying to do, then that is one of the most powerful leadership styles, far better than the hard-nosed leader who only tells you when you're doing things wrong.
And this is important for employees as well. I mean, employers, I think if we all lived more of a life of gratitude, saying, hey, I love this job, I have this job, maybe they need less appreciation. I think that that's an awareness as well. And like you said, when you're growing up, your mom is always saying, hey, Gino, you did a great job. You know, it doesn't say anything to the son, to my brother. That may lead off into adulthood where I may not need appreciation as much because I've had it. I've had that self-esteem, whereas a younger sibling may not have gotten that. So that's really important, like you said, to get to know your employees as well. But I think everyone out there, live a life of gratitude. And jobs are scarce. Really good jobs are harder to come by now. There's a lot of jobs, but jobs that you can have impact in, jobs that you really like, sometimes just be aware of that and having that gratitude and putting off that energy, that vibe, will want to have people work with you, and that appreciation will come out naturally, at least I think.
Yes, agreed. It's really important for people to know how much you value them. And this ties in with apologies as well. I encourage people to kind of sandwich or Oreo an apology between words of affection, appreciation, and commitment. For example, if I was apologizing to a coworker, I might say, you know what, I want to circle back to something I did yesterday. It wasn't the best. I don't like how, you know, I was short with you, and, you know, I don't want to offer an explanation because it's just going to sound like an excuse. And the fact is, there's no excuse for me being short with you. And the reason I want to circle back and talk about it is because our working relationship and our friendship is really important to me. So I wish I could do a redo. May I please take back those words? And then after the apology, go into more about that. Like, you know, I hope we can do something together again. Maybe even spending, you know, I wouldn't use the word quality time, but, you know, I liked it that one time when we were in the habit of getting lunch now and then. Would you consider doing that with me next week? And if you set a date, be sure you keep it, because anything that comes up that would change that date is going to tell the person you're not my priority. So you want to guard those dates very carefully.
Dr. Jen, that was brilliant what you just did. And if all of us could just do that, yes, at work, but also at home with our family, with our friends, you know,
What do you want me to do now?
Did you hear what she said? We can rewind it.
No, you can say it.
Well, it was an apology with a affirmation of, you know, here's why I appreciate you.
Well, you have to assume that I did something wrong to apologize. I don't know if I've done anything wrong in the last 24, 36 years. So enlighten me, baby. Tell me.
I wasn't personal. Every time I say something, he assumes it's because of something he's done wrong. He's so good. It's kind of a joke.
Yeah, here's something practical that people can do today to make their apologies better. And that is, if your habit is to lead off with, I'm sorry, drop it. Because that's only one of our five apology languages, and it's overused. Mm-hmm. And the reason a lot of people don't like it is you're not accepting responsibility, right? Like, I can be sorry you lost your job, but I didn't have any part in that. So it's cheap in a way. So I'm encouraging everyone to lead into an apology with, I apologize. Mm-hmm. Because this is a neutral base. And it lets the person know, look, I'm not trying to blame you. I'm not trying to excuse myself. This is something that I want to fix with you.
I
get triggered by that because my kids, really bothers me when they say, I'm sorry. And I didn't know why until now, because it feels like so repetitive, so cheap. And like you said,
when we're forcing our kids to say sorry, I think that was a mistake. We actually talked about this in our last podcast, Dr. Jen, and I have since then been saying, I apologize and not, I'm sorry. So I just remembered that now that you say that, but we force people to apologize and say sorry. And so they do it as they're grinning their teeth. And clearly it doesn't mean anything.
That's on the radar now. So
you'll notice it now that I mentioned it, you will notice, because I'm very aware of that, because apology is a big deal. And especially when we're apologizing to our children or to, you know, a loved one that we really love and appreciate, we want to make sure that they know that what we did was wrong and here's why it was wrong. And that's where I usually, you know, we talked about this last time probably. So go back to the last podcast we had with Dr. Jen Thompson. And it's a great podcast about this. Let's revisit that.
Dr. Jennifer Brown, we could continue to go on and talk about the book. We love the book. Where can the listeners get a hold of the book? Because you've got a great website and you've got another book as well.
That's right. People can go to my website, which is drjenthomas.com. It's drjenthomas.com. And there I have it under on my front page. It can click right through to a major bookseller. But I also encourage people to go support your local bookstore and buy it there if you can. Mm-hmm. And also they might want to check out my free resource tab where I have the 5 love languages quiz and our 5 apology language quiz for free.
I'm looking at Julia's notes. I'm trying to get through these notes. Well, I think she wrote a book on your book, which is really great. I want to wrap this up, really.
I just want to say something.
I apologize. It's your turn.
There you go.
Well, I just want to, everyone out there, whether you know you're starting a business or you're in the midst of it, or you're working for someone and you do have little issues, maybe, you know, you just want to keep those relationships on track, or you're looking for strategies to make things better at work, because when work is not okay, we come home and now we're dealing with our family and we're not in a good place. And so our whole life is a mess, and mm-hmm. you know, let's start somewhere, but just to look for strategies to avoid conflict and to be open to, you know, different mindset on another person, instead of assuming the other person is believing something. This book is really an eye opener, and it really has some incredible just tips on what to do, because a lot of us, you know, listening to, it's like, we're trying to figure out how to handle everyone in our life, our spouse and our children and the people we work with. And it does get overwhelming sometimes. We're trying
to, a lot.
Oh my gosh. Sometimes it's like all these people and I'm exhausted. And at the end of the day, it's like, oh my God, I don't even want to talk to anybody. But it mm-hmm. is, in the end, it does get easier once you figure it out. And as it gets mm-hmm. easier, your life is more at peace, and people actually want to come to you and talk to you instead of avoid
That's
you.
When the magic happens. That's when you're really going to get worn out, but it's in place of
But it's incredible. 100% worth it. All the work and effort that we put into our relationships is 100% worth it.
One other thing I'd like to say, right before we add up, we haven't talked about the 5 love languages. If you don't, we have the podcast with Dr. Gary Chapman. We've had a lot of podcasts with a lot of the authors of Dr. Gary Chapman's 5 love languages. They're in this book as well. We didn't go over the apology languages and the offensive languages. So much information in this book. So I just implore you all to go out there mm-hmm. and learn how to apologize. And it's one of the most powerful things we ever did with our children, learning how to apologize to them as well, mm-hmm. really raising
them. Even though we still mess up with it.
Still a hard thing to do. So, but now ongoing. I apologize. So we just want to thank you for being just an amazing guest.
Any last words that you want to just, you know, leave off for the listeners?
Yes. Thank you for shining a light on this topic. I appreciate your time. And I hope everyone will go out and think about, when you apologize, not just what you want to say, but what are they waiting to hear?
Nice.
Thank you, Dr. Jen. We appreciate the time today. And everybody, let's go out and let's all make it happen. Take care.
All right. Bye, everyone. Thanks, everyone. Thank you.